on Cork's Good Times.
Red FM.
Well, welcome along to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times, Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour, bringing you all of the sporting action from around the Rebel County and further afield. Now, I was going to go to Cork City Audio here first, but Guy Swindles has the news of an equaliser at the London Stadium.
West Ham 1, Manchester City 1. West Ham equalising out of absolutely nothing. They suddenly broke down the right with skipper Jared Bowen. He cut inside, put a dangerous cross in, but there was no West Ham player particularly near it, but Ruben Dias put through his own net. This a minute after Kevin De Bruyne had hit the bar, Jack Grealish had missed an excellent chance, and all after Erling Haaland had scored with his second chance of the game to make it 1-0 City. West Ham 1, Manchester City 1.
Just as Arsenal fans were probably celebrating, I was informed by Stevie G inside there that Man City have now gone a goal ahead once again. So it was Manchester City 2, West Ham 1 there at the London Stadium. Now to a bit of Cork City action. And City, of course, had a 3-2 win at home to Longford Town last night with the last minute winner. What scenes there in the shed, as always. And the very own Roy O'Hagan was there for us to grab audio from City boss Tim Clancy, as well as the man who ultimately won us the game by scoring his brace, City hero Seanan Maguire, a man who needs no introduction to City fans at this stage. Enjoy.
I thought we completely controlled the first half, and then we don't win a duel from a long ball. a duel with a long ball, and the kid gets a good finish, in fairness to him, and then I think we got the equaliser. I thought we were completely in control again, and then they were given a penalty, which looked very soft, to be honest. And it gives them the little G up to get ahead just before half time. And in second half, obviously, listen, you expect it. Longford are down at the bottom of the league, and they were obviously holding on, but still looked very dangerous on the counter. We obviously tried to commit a lot of players forward, and Brad was needed, and Darragh Crowley made an amazing block at one stage right on the goal line. But again, we kept going, and we didn't get enough crosses into the box. I spoke about last week, and we put a couple of quality balls in near the end, and Shawnee pops up with two. There wasn't a lot said, to be honest, but yeah, I just wanted to speak to the referee, and he just wouldn't speak to me. He refused to speak to me, so I probably said something I shouldn't have said, but no language or any aggression around my show, and it was just something was said, and then he just flashed the red card at me. So I think it seemed a little bit he was trying to be the centre of attention there. I think the penalty is not a penalty. I was going to speak to him about that. Just in general, we looked at the video of it, and I think it's good defending by Derry. Gets his body goal side. There was also another one where I think it was Malik broke down the right, and their player came across and just kicked him. And there's no yellow card, and he was flashing yellow cards at our lads. So I thought Declan struggled a little bit out there. I don't know if it's fitness wise or stuff like that, but I think he struggled a little bit. That's it. Again, it's a really good habit to get into, is scoring late goals. Spoke about afterwards there, we said just the most important thing is for players like Shawnee Keats and Murph and the other attacking players in this squad that we have, is even though the balls mightn't be on point every time coming into the box, don't stop making the same runs. And if you look at the second and third goal, it's balls at the end line and gets to the back post, and it's flashed back across by Evan, I think it is. Shawnee dips in front of the defender and puts it into the net. And the last goal as well, the winner is Bagsy, does well down the right. Keats gets across the first centre back, and Shawnee gets across the second centre half, and really striker's goal, and that gets us the 3 points. I've not spoke to anyone. Obviously I spent a lot of time in Scotland, so my assistant manager spent his whole career in Scotland as well, so I know there's obviously a lot of history of the two of us over there. No, I've had no approach. I've not spoke to anyone, so I'm at what I think is the biggest club in the country. We had a job at the start of the season, which was to win the league, and we've got ourselves in a position now that we're one win away from winning the first division, with six games to spare. So I think when you look at the league campaign that we've had, I can't fault any players or staff for that, because I think we've been exceptionally consistent, and we've ground out and found ways to win games when it's been very difficult. As we spoke at length in the last lot of weeks. Teams have a go at us and leave space. You can see that the likes of Malik and Cahill and the attacking players that we have really finding space and doing really well. So, and when teams are low blocks the way they were again tonight in the second half, we found a way again. So that's a sign of a good team.
Tim, you're in position over. You can win the league against UCD next week. It'll be an exciting night.
Again, listen, it's a 28 game, 29 games now, I think it is, we're about to play in, so to get ourselves in a position where we can get the, we can get a one win away from securing the league title and doing it in good fashion as well. I thought we've had a good mix of young players and obviously experienced players this season. The ambition that the club has shown in the summer by securing Keats and Shawnee for multi-year deals shows that after a very tough season last year, we're very close to getting ourselves right back to where we want to be, and hopefully with the club again. I think I spoke with this previously with the late change in ownership or whatever it was, the start of the last Premier Division campaign. I think Colin was probably maybe behind the black ball a little bit. It looks like we can have a little bit better preparation for the Premier Division next season, and I think if we can secure the signatures of a lot of the good young players that we have at the club and get a few more experienced players in, we'll find ourselves in a good position next year.
With Sean and Rory coming in, they're obviously such high profile signings, there's obviously a lot of pressure on their shoulders, so must be delighted with Sean's two goals tonight, Rory's two goals in the last two games, and I suppose that takes a lot of pressure off them.
Yeah, yes and no. Listen, the lads are going to score goals. They've consistently scored goals their whole career. So, and again, it's coming into a new team for them, a new team, a new style of play. Again, against a lot of teams that there's not a lot of space in behind. So, but again, if you've seen the first maybe 15-20 minutes, I think they linked up well, and Shawnee probably could have got himself a couple of goals. Nicked one past the keeper and it just ran to the end line, and not only just dragged past the post as well. So listen, when you're not creating chances and you're not getting chances, you'd be more worried. But something that we spoke about at the start of the season when we scored, I think, set pieces for two or three games in a row, and I think people were saying that we were going to struggle to score goals. But listen, we've got quality in the squad and loads of it. So listen, again, it's one of them ones that we keep creating chances, the lads will score goals.
Let's see Keane Bagley back and set up Shawnee there for the winner.
Yeah, again, Bagsy's very direct. I thought Mal was fantastic tonight. I thought he was picking the ball up in good pockets. He threatened him behind, he mixed the game up, he went down the line, he went inside. I thought he was excellent, and he's probably tired a little bit near the end, and to have Bagsy back, I think he was hitting a really good run of form just before he got injured. He was doing really, really well, and again, that's another assist for him. He's got a little bit different to Mal. He's probably more out and out winger, boots on the touchline on the chalk and go down the line and get crosses in, and again, he's come off the bench, he's impacted the game, and the lads have stuck it away.
Sorry, how good was that scoring the winner into the short end?
Yeah, it was good because I had a couple of chances first half, and then I suppose I've had a couple in the last kind of couple of games, kind of half chances where I feel like if when I'm fully fit I'd be scoring, and that means I would have scored two the last kind of couple of games. But then to score a couple of tonight, yeah, it's done the world of good for me, confidence, and most importantly, I think that puts us in a good frame of mind going into next week. I believe if you win next week, yeah, you win the league, so it was an important win tonight. And I suppose that's why me and Keats have been brought into back to the club for moments like this. To score goals at important times. Keats got his one in the first half, and then myself scoring two in the second half, and obviously Keats last week scoring a winner. So that's what we've done at the club previous, and I think I've spoke about it before, where I think Cork City gets the best out of both of us, and if the last couple of games it's probably been, I'd say 40-50% of our full match fitness. It's really exciting times to see us clicking when we are 100% fit. I can really be excited for the next couple of years, really, because I really enjoy playing with him. I don't think I've played with a striker that enjoyed playing as well with Keats. Maybe going back to my Preston days when I played with Emile Reese, because I really enjoy playing with Keats, because all of us can do the same role, whether if that's dropping in running in behind, and I really enjoy it. And as I said, it's only been 3 or 4 games, so imagine what it's going to be like this time next year.
So a lot of expectation, are you supposed to hit the ground running, considering you're such high profile signing? So did you feel that pressure coming in, and has that kind of been released now with those 2 goals tonight?
I feel like when I've gone to like Coventry, Carlisle, I felt a little bit of pressure. But coming back to Cork, I don't think I feel the pressure as much, because I know I'm going to enjoy my football. I know I'm going to score goals at this club, and I know this club football club is going to get the best out of me. Because when I step onto that pitch, I feel like I'm enjoying every minute of it. And yeah, there's pressure because you're bringing me and Keats back, and yeah, again, the club are expecting goals and obviously win the title this year and goals next year, but that's what we're here to do. And I feel like the more the pressure probably brings out the best in us.
If that kind of goalless run went down and on, you would have got more and more pressure, but just to get off.
Yeah, like, I mean, as a striker, the more the games go on, the more you start second guessing yourself. You take that extra touch, you take another touch, and then by the time you shoot, the defender blocks it. Like, you see my first goal tonight, it's about 2 yards out. They're the kind of goals you need to kind of get you going, and then like Bagsy puts an unbelievable ball in, and that's kind of been my trademark, I suppose, in my career, especially when I was at Cork, making that run at front post, because I was doing quite a lot in the game, and I suppose I could have said to myself last 10 minutes I'm knackered, I'm not going to do it this time, but thankfully I did it, and yeah, I scored the winner then.
What's that feeling like then, scoring the winner? Shed roars. I mean, it probably brought back a lot of memories.
It did, all I can remember is when I kind of regretted doing the knee slide because it started cramping and bought me calves. And the next thing I know, like, all the boys are jumping in. But that's how you win titles at any level. Like, scoring late winners like that the last 2 games, that brings getting 2 points to 6 points. And then it delays you winning the league, whereas you get the league wrapped up as soon as you can. You enjoy the rest of the season. You get as many points, as many goals as you can, and then you look forward to next season.
First goal since Bray, June 2017.
Yeah,
Cork City. So
yeah, that was probably one of my best goals for Cork City. Yeah. Actually, yeah, mate, the header, because I think that made me get 20 goals, and then I think I hit.
You missed that day as well.
The record was like 21 or something. Mm. And Caulfield took me off the last 20 minutes. I won't forget that. Now I'm joking. But yeah, going back what seven years ago. Yeah, it's good. Like, I mean, it was tough tonight. I think them type of games, you know, when teams sitting and stuff, it's really tough, frustrating for a striker or a forward player, because you're playing any team that plays in it, just a low block, 11 men behind the ball. They were quite good on the break after. To give it to them, they had created a lot of chances, good chances. I'm not sure about the penalty though. I mean, like, this day and age, fair enough, he gives him a jostle, but my God, like, if you're going to start giving penalties for that every week, then you're going to be having 3 or 4 penalties a week. But lucky enough, we ended up winning the game, and we look forward now to hopefully winning next week and winning the league.
I think it can be really good, and I think the more we get to know each other off the pitch, we'll only have on the pitch. Because to be honest, I have really enjoyed playing with him. I know the last been a couple of games, it's been tough playing against teams and playing a low block and stuff like that. But you can see tonight, there's been, when people watch the game carefully, they can see the passages of play we've been doing. We're pleasant to Pete Keats, I play off him, and then we're out and play that wide, just small things, and we, like, when the ball goes wide, but we're always on our toes, we keep speaking to each other. Like, Keats knows, like, see, for my third goal, Keats could have nicked that, but I think he knew I made that run right behind him. Because I think if Keats could easily just touch that, he could have shot himself. But I was shouting behind him, and he knew I was behind him, because we always keep making those runs, and he kind of makes that goal in a way, because he drags that defender across and creates a space for me to obviously score. So as I said, the more we're training with each other for the next couple of months, looking into next season, the better it's going to get, because as I said, playing against teams that are just like banks of 4 or 5 or 4 or 6, it's going to be difficult at any sort of level. Like, as I said, you can be frustrated and you could keep making those runs for 89 minutes, and then I suppose I could have been frustrated and said, nah, I'm not going to make that run, and then as he plays that unbelievable ball and I'm not there, I'll be kicking myself. But just said I'll keep making those runs, and thankfully when I did make that run, like Bagsy, he's pretty much put on a plate for me. I was just going to have to let it hit off my foot, because I think it was hard for the keeper to react because it happened so quickly. But like Bagsy, I told Bagsy as soon as he came on fresh legs, get your head down, get down the line, hook balls in the box. He's looked at 3 goals tonight. Against a low block team, sometimes you just need to get wide and just get in the box. Keith's first goal, second goal, ball to back post, head just lashes it across and there to tap in, and then third goal is obviously another cross. So it's good that you can mix and match your game. You've seen against Derry where we're playing against a good side, a team probably similar level as us, good players and stuff like that, and it was a different type of game, creating different types of chances. So it's been enjoyable. I've really enjoyed it being back. Probably when I actually get 100% fit, the season will probably be over. But all I got to do now at the end of the season is just win as many games as you can, pick up as many goals as you can, and then bring that into next season. I've heard that being talked about. I mentioned before, I think if you want to try compete and try and win titles in the Premier Division, I think you do need a little bit more of experience. I mean, you look at the two top teams in the Premier Division this year, like Shells and Derry, most of the team are like fellas have played, I mean, a lot of league games and stuff like that. We've got some really, really good players in our dressing room now, and I suppose we played against Derry this season, and we really should have won the game. But look, if it is the case of the likes of Bucks coming back, that would be great, and that'll only help the club and the team going forward, not only to compete next year, but to challenge at the top end of the table. Because I feel like that's where the club should be, and I think that's where everyone at the club should be aiming for. We should be aiming for, yeah, getting promoted this season and just competing. I think it's in a better state this year than it was probably 2 years ago when they were coming up, where you can go, right, we'll give this a go, because we've got some really good players, not just in the starting 11. You look at the bench, they have been really impressed since they've been coming back. Like Healer's coming on off the bench today, like, I think he's a really good player. Got a couple of minutes tonight, and there's some fellas who obviously haven't been playing. There's a really lots of talent in the squad this year.
Sorry.
I'll forgive him. There's always the next time. Just about. I think he's given me a few in the past. So.
Well, on tonight's show.
Thanks, man. You mentioned the building the partnership with Rory. Do you think that's the understanding with, I suppose, the wide players and the, kind of with the crosses coming in and the balls from deep, do you think that supply and the understanding there is kind of growing as well as the
Big
go?
Time, yeah, because different types of goals. I mean, Ev's cross for Rory was kind of a little bit deeper and a different type of goal to where I scored my second and third one. And then again, you look at Keith's goal against Cove. Like, he scored from probably 15, 16 yards. He's kind of... I think when you watch it back on Instagram and stuff like that, it doesn't really look that far out, but watching it in actual person, it was some header. Well, as I said before, yeah, the more we're going to get to play with each other and get better understanding of each other, the better it's going to get. As you can see that the last couple of games, and I've said it before, we ain't 100% fit, because we probably haven't played as much football as we have done in the last kind of couple of months. So it's been enjoyable, and I've really enjoyed playing the last kind of couple of games.
And I know Tim mentioned you could have had one or two more in the first half. Is that something you think about, kind of setting targets for kind of the rest of the season, or how do you approach that?
I'm not not one for setting targets, but I just go into every game hoping that I can score a brace or a hat-trick. Like, I know when I scored tonight, I knew there was another one, because when you score a goal early, but it wasn't even that early, I feel like when I do get that next chance, so say for example I scored that tapping that I did in the first, the chances that I got in the first half, especially the one where Jack's played over the top and I've took a good touch and I've hit a void, if I got that after I scored the first goal, maybe I had a little bit more confidence to smash it even near side of the keeper. As I said, being a footballer, yeah, it's full of confidence, but especially being a striker, I mean, if you score a goal, you feel like, yeah, you can take everyone on, and it's how it is. This has given us a good step now for the remainder of the last few games, and
as I said, next week's a big one. Hopefully a big crowd follows up to Dublin. Hopefully we can win the league.
Johnny Denise strapped up tonight. Is there anything worry there or is it?
No, I've kind of got a whack on it. I've got a whack on it the first game against Athlone. Literally right into the inside. And I kind of just swelled up, so I just said, oh, just strap it up. It's actually the first time I've strapped it up, and I felt all right, so...
Done for the rest of the season, so...
Yeah, it wasn't even my knee, it was my calves, and as I said, knee slide and stuff like that didn't help it.
Yeah, the knee slide certainly didn't help, but it was great to see in front of the shed. City boss Tim Clancy and City striker and legend Seán Maguire there at the end as well. Now, not to play the same audio twice, but here we go anyway. There was a part of that interview I want to share with you again. It's the piece where Tim was asked about the recent Raith Rovers rumours.
No, I've not spoke to anyone. Obviously, I spent a lot of time in Scotland, so my assistant manager spent his whole career in Scotland as well, so I know there's obviously a lot of history between us over there. No, I've had no approach, I've not spoke to anyone, so I'm at what I think is the biggest club in the country. We had a job at the start of the season, which was to win the league, and we've got ourselves in a position now that we're one win away from winning the First Division. With six games to spare, so I think when you look at the league campaign that we've had, I can't fault any players or staff for that, because I think we've been exceptionally consistent, and we've ground out and found ways to win games when it's been very difficult. As we spoke at length in the last lot of weeks, when teams have a go at us and leave space, you can see that the likes of Malik and Cahill and the attacking players that we have really finding space and doing really well. So, and when teams are low blocks the way they were again tonight in the second half, we found a way again. So that's a sign of a good team.
Well, biggest club in the country, you heard it here first. That, of course, to do with the recent rumours of Tim perhaps receiving interest from Raith Rovers. We'll just have to take his word for it for the time. Being bad day to be an Everton fan. Well, look, to be fair, that's probably every day. Shane Pinnington was there for us at Goodison Park with the match report.
He's finished. Everton 2, Bournemouth 3. The most improbable finish to this game leaves Everton rock bottom after being 2-0 up on cruising. It went 2-0 up courtesy of finishes from Michael King and Dominic Calvert-Lewin early in the second half. And with 3 minutes to go in the game, it looked like Everton were coasting to the 3 points. But then Antoine Semedo took a turn from Travers Cross and into 6 minutes of injury time in 92nd minute. Home, the equaliser from 6 yards from a Sinisterra cross, and then deep into 6 minutes added on, Sinisterra was the winner himself, heading home from 6 yards from Fiverr's cross. An amazing finish in this Premier League game. It's in the finish, Everton 2, Bournemouth 3.
Yeah, Everton stealing a defeat from the jaws of victory there. Here is manager Sean Dyche speaking after the game.
Just threw the game away, just from doing not the hard yards and the basics. Win your headers, win your tackles, win your races. You get that right, we see the game through, no problem at all. Yeah. We don't do that. They do, just chipping it forward like they've done all day. We dealt with it all day. Our body language said it all.
You'd have to imagine new manager inbound at Everton, and only 3 weeks into the Premier League season. Elsewhere in the Premier League, Chris Cave reports from the King Power Stadium.
Leicester City 1, Aston Villa 2, but what a frenetic end to this one, with Leicester having not one but two penalty appeals, Vardy at the centre of them both. The first wasn't given, and rightly so in my opinion, after Tielemans appeared to get to the ball before bringing the striker down. The second one was awarded after Vardy took a tumble, only for the flag to go up for an offside in the build-up, meaning a huge sigh of relief for Unai Emery's side. Amadou Onana's close-range finish and a John Duran header put them on course for the 3 points, but Facundo Buonanotte's low volley saw Leicester rally. Despite that late drama, it's 3 defeats from as many matches for Steve Cooper in the Premier League, but the Villa are back to winning ways. Leicester 1, Aston Villa 2.
That's where Wolves responded immediately at the City ground earlier. Adam Dury reports.
Nottingham Forest 1, Wolves 1. Despite all the effort and chances created, neither side were quite able to grasp all 3 points here. Forest went in front on 10 when Chris Wood headed in an Anderson corner, but Forest only needed 2 minutes to respond. Sean Rickner better got doing so with a rocket from 25 yards. Wolves struggled to be clinical enough as they pushed for a winner, but they can thank debutant Sam Johnson too for his heroic keeping that kept Forest at bay, preserving a draw. Full time at the City Ground, Nottingham Forest 1, Wolves 1.
I was going to say lastly, but I saw the halftime report for West Ham Man City has just arrived in. But Ipswich 1, Fulham 1. Cork's Chiodose Ogbene, part of this Ipswich side, of course. Ryan Bramelow reports from Portman Road.
It finished Ipswich 1, Fulham 1. Ipswich secure their first point of the new Premier League season in a dogged affair at Portman Road. A spirited start from the host was crowned with a stunner. Liam Delap from range nestled a beauty beyond Leno, but their fire was soon extinguished 15 minutes later as Adama Traore replied with a leveller. They pushed hard for a winner, and at times it was in reach, but Ogbene fluffed his lines when clean through on goal. A valuable point for both sides. Final score, Ipswich 1, Fulham 1.
Ben F. fluffing his lines, not like the former Nemo Rangers man, but I'm sure he'll be banging in the goals for Ipswich very soon. Halftime, it's West Ham 1, Manchester City 2. Guy Swindles has a report there for us.
West Ham 1, Manchester City 2. West Ham will wonder, however, how they are still in this. Manchester City have scored twice, both through Erling Haaland in the 10th minute and the 30th. Super finishes on both occasions, but he's also missed a couple. Kevin De Bruyne has hit the bar. Lewis has missed an absolute sitter. City should be out of sight. West Ham somehow got level. That was when Bowen broke down the right and his cross was turned into his own net by Ruben Dias under no pressure whatsoever. West Ham have occasionally looked dangerous on the break, but City should be much further ahead. It's West Ham 1, Manchester City 2.
All the big guns are coming out today as we're going from the Premier League to Cork Handball. Earlier on today, I spoke with Kieran O'Connor, the secretary of Bóthar Buí Handball, to talk about his son Tadhg winning the under 14 All Ireland Handball Championship. Huge run to Tadhg, and enjoy. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by Kieran O'Connor of Bóthar Buí Handball Club. Kieran, there was a fair bit of success in the handball club very recently.
Yeah, I suppose we were delighted there with a recent win with Tadhg. He won the 60 by 30 All-Ireland under 14 singles. So it was a great honour for the club, and it's a great honour for Tadhg as well.
What's your own position within the club, Kieran?
I suppose I'm secretary of the club. I'm Tadhg's dad as well. So I suppose Tadhg has been going to the handball alley with me, I suppose, as long as he can walk. So this is something he's been playing handball for a long, long time. So, you know, he's put a huge amount of time into playing, and he's been very lucky, I suppose, with the club members as well. Then that he has, you know, this year when he was training, he had two of the adult members, Evan Enright and Aidan Lennon, who provided him a lot of games to help him throughout his training. And you know, he's had huge support from the other coaches in the club, you know, including the chairman, Danny Lennon. Mm-hmm. And all those people, I suppose, were behind the success, and that's something that's very important for the club, that we're promoting the game, but we're also supporting those young people all the ways through their training, and give them every chance to have success.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get to Tadhg in a second, but for your own self, how did you first get involved in handball?
I suppose at a young age, I was maybe 7 or 8 years of age. The local handball club built the alley here in the village, and they started training juveniles, and I started training at 8 years of age, and I suppose became more and more involved in the club over the years, and became secretary. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's, I suppose, a huge love of handball. It's an ongoing thing. We've done a huge amount of travel with different members around Ireland to different clubs and different competitions, and it's a real bug. When you get the handball bug, it's something that that stays with you forever.
Yeah, did you ever manage to win an All Ireland yourself?
No, I never won an All Ireland myself.
The son's the gifted one.
One or two county titles was the limit of my skills, I'm afraid. And I suppose more the coaching side is where I'm interested.
Yeah, well, what did make you decide to want to get into the coaching side?
I suppose I'd have coached our own juveniles over the last maybe 25 years in the club, and you know, there's huge satisfaction when you see somebody come in at a young age, maybe 4 or 5 years of age, and you see them progress, win a county title, maybe go on, win a Munster title, and then win an All-Ireland title. And we've had that with a number of club members. We've had a lot of success over the years, and we've been very, very lucky. But it's I suppose that development, and you see them transitioning all the ways up to an adult, and then you see them as adults supporting the next number of juveniles coming up through the club. That's a huge satisfaction for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. A question I had now, and you think I know this as a sports presenter, I'm fairly sure it is. Is handball under the GAA umbrella?
Correct, it is.
Okay, so that's why there's the county and All-Ireland series as well.
Much absolutely. Like an All-Ireland football. And headquarters are just beside Croke Park in Dublin. There's a new handball facility opened there a couple of years ago.
And is there like county teams and then things like that as well? There's a breakdown into...
It does, yeah. I guess you will say the juveniles would start at under 12, and then they play just Munster up as far as under 14, and then they go into the All Ireland series, and you'd have a singles and a doubles, boys and girls for each age group all the way up to minor, and then under 21, and then they progress to adult, and I suppose. It's a fantastic game. You know, we have players here in Cork over 65, over 70, and it's a game that, you know, you can play pretty much all the ways up. Mm.
Yeah, I suppose this game kind of anyone can get involved in, really, which is such a great thing about it. Have you seen handball progress or degress from your time playing, numbers wise?
I think we've seen handball. It goes through different phases, and I think it's really progressing at the moment. There's a number of different codes which have come on stream. The 60 by 30 is old Irish handball, as we call it. And then we have the 40 by 20. It's just the size of the court, 40 foot by 20 foot, 60 foot by 30 foot, which is more an American-style game, but it's been in Ireland a long number of years, and the majority of clubs would be that type. But I suppose over the last number of years, we've seen one wall become very common. The World One Wall Championships were held in UL in Limerick just the week before last. And we had a number of, you know, there was a number of great successes there. From around the county and country, so it's fantastic. One wall, I think, is the growing sport in handball at the moment, because it's a lot easier for schools, you know, to just put up a one wall, mm-hmm. and it can combine maybe with a hurling wall, etc.
Yeah, totally. Your own son Tig, what huge success he had, of course, as we mentioned, winning the under 14 All Ireland 60 by 30 handball final. Was it a tough road to the final for him, and how did he cope?
He had some tough games. I suppose he had a really tough game in the Munster final. He played Shane Delaney from Tipperary. He lost the first game, really tight game, 14-15, and then he won the next game 15-8, and he won the third game 15-13. Shane is a really tough competitor, and these guys would be nip and tuck for the last few years in different competitions. So that was a big win for him. He ended up playing Tyrone in the All-Ireland semi-final then, which he won comfortably, 15-3, 15-4. But then in the final, he met Bertie O'Donoghue from Galway. Now, Bertie would be an accomplished player and has been in a number of All-Ireland finals over the last couple of years, even though he's very young. Mm-hmm. And on the day, you know, Ty played very well. He won the first game 15-1. And the second game was much tighter. Bert became more comfortable in play. And Ty just pipped him at 15-12. So good games. But, you know, every day is a tough day. The 60 by 30 code isn't our local game. We actually, 40 by 20 is our local alley. So mm-hmm. I suppose it's from that perspective, it makes it that bit more difficult because it's that slightly different game.
What did Tig make of it all? He must have been absolutely thrilled with himself.
Ah, he was thrilled. I suppose going to the final, he knew he'd have to really perform if he was going to beat Bertie. Bertie has had the experience of playing in a number of finals, and that's something that, you know, stands to players. But on the day, Tig really, you know, he was very cool and calm and collected. And he just went in and did his business very, very professionally. And you know, afterwards he was absolutely thrilled, and he's been on a little bit of a high since, which is fantastic for him.
Yeah, totally.
Fantastic for the club as well.
Yeah, totally understandable. It was great for him as well to get recognised July winner of the Rebel Oak Monthly Award too.
Absolutely. I mean, he wasn't expecting that at all, and it was a real added bonus for him. So he was absolutely thrilled with that. And you know, it's something that it's a fantastic award, and it's something that he has forever.
Yeah.
In fairness to Rebel Oak, it was a fantastic event, and he really appreciated the award.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do fantastic work in Rebel Oak. I suppose, what does he play other sports, Kieran?
He does. I suppose he plays Gaelic football as well. We don't have a hurling club here in our own club in Boherby, but he plays football as well with BK Plunketts. It's a giant team here. Boherby and Knocknagree plays under 14 with them as well. So they're his main two sports, I guess, football and handball.
Ah, great stuff. Hopefully he can continue in both long into the future as well and get stuck in.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Look, just for people who ever want to get involved in handball, how can they go about it? I suppose we'll start with Boherby anyway.
Absolutely. There's a number of clubs around the county. You have Liscarl, you have Mallow, you have Cana in East Cork. You have Kilwart in East Cork, so Macroom. So there are a number of clubs around the county. And, you know, just even if you jump on the website, the GA Handball website, there's a club locator there, and you can see where your local club is in each county. So, you know, that's a great opportunity. And as I said previously, a number of the schools are starting to introduce one wall as well. You know, that's another opportunity for somebody to get involved.
Well, brilliant stuff. Kieran O'Connor of Boherby Handball, thanks so much for joining us, and a huge congratulations to your son Tig as well for in the under 14 All-Ireland Handball Championship.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Yeah, huge congratulations to Tig, and thanks a million to Kieran for speaking with me. Dan Casey here with you, going for the halftime break a little late today. Coming up after the break though, I will be chatting to Paddy Smullen, son of champion jockey Pat Smullen, in aid of a very special event, as well as Mark Hogan of NFL Ireland, to chat the College Classic American football game in the Aviva Stadium last weekend. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next 20 minutes or so at this stage. This conversation happened on Monday, so some things might be ever so slightly dated, but I don't think we're looking too bad. Here's me speaking with Mark Hogan of NFL Ireland to chat all things NFL based naturally, but especially the American Football College Classic that took place in the Aviva Stadium last weekend. Well, we're delighted to be joined here with Mark Hogan of NFL Ireland. Mark, are we getting on anyway, first of all?
We're doing all right. It was a mad week. I think that the rest of the boys are all taking a few days. And I think a lot of the country that was involved anyway in going to that game, it was, I suppose, like a Paddy's Day that we're all coming back from now on a Monday. At least if you're from the north of the country, you had the bank holiday, but not to us down here.
No. And speaking of people from the north of the country, is there any update on Charlie Smith and how he's getting on with the Saints at the moment?
It's a big few days for Charlie Smith. The NFL preseason just ended, so the final roster cuts and the 53 men will be decided upon in the next few days. In terms of Charlie himself, I suppose we might not get too excited, because the guy he's competing against, Blake Groupie, definitely sounded very confident when he was speaking to the media after the game. Whereas he got all the kicks inside their final third preseason game, whereas Charlie didn't get onto the field for anything other than a kickoff. He did feel a bit of tightness in his legs. That could be partly to do with it, but Blake Rupi did say that he knew ahead of time that he was going to be on full duty. So we might need to brace for a bit of disappointing news there in terms of being the starter, but all hope isn't lost. He could end up with another team. At the very least, we would expect him to hang around with the Saints and the practice squad, because they're certainly absolutely intrigued by him. And the talk of the town of New Orleans is the size of Charlie's leg. He can kick it from anywhere. So he'll hang around. It just mightn't have been the absolute best news we hoped for.
And the past weekend, it looked absolutely wild. From someone who's deeply involved in American football here in Ireland, how was it for you?
Probably a bit too much. I'm actually coming back from a broken leg myself and might have overdone it over the last weekend. But like I said, anyone that was involved in the festivities over the weekend really was like a Paddy's Day. Trust the Americans to come over and show us how to do it. If you're down on Thames Street, they had it taken over with a big college game day set. And I'm talking, they have the absolute superstars of college football broadcasters speaking down there and having their game live. So I think us as the Irish, we really were able to embrace it. We had an Irish man on the field with Kerry Shanahan, which was absolutely fantastic to see David out there and to be winning or whatever. And even though FSU was the big team coming in, we were able to get behind our own and give the Georgia team a bit of support, and it got them over the line, we hope, in the end.
One thing I kind of want to pick up on, surely the GA can learn from these college American football games. Like, they make a whole weekend of just a college game, yet the All-Ireland final, hurling and football, just goes by with a whimper every single weekend when it turns into a full Friday, Saturday, Sunday carnival atmosphere in Dublin when the American football comes to town.
Yeah, again, we trust the Americans to show us how it's done. We were down on the set. We were with hordes of people, like thousands down on Dame Street, thinking, why couldn't we do this for the All-Ireland? Like, we're very lucky with the TV coverage the night before, but it's, you're waiting for 9 o'clock to roll around for you to really be able to embrace the All-Ireland, whereas this was a whole day event. A lot of people were taking off from Friday afternoon. They were taking off from work, the Irish crowd, to be able to experience a game that they mightn't even had full like knowledge of. So definitely, I think there's a lot of learning points there. And I think even other leagues were coming over. I think even the NFL probably had people on the ground to say, oh, well, how is this college being done? And if we were ever to get a game, how could we do things to, you know, live up to this atmosphere?
You think the NFL are looking? Surely the Steelers come back sooner rather than later.
Well, there was images of the Steelers, one of the Steelers owners, Dan Rooney, in town during the week, and he's been over plenty of times. He did obviously say to us that they had a feasibility study back in July, I think it went. Now, I don't know how that went, but we know that they're looking into it. So if he's pictured in Ireland and there's a college game going on, you have to imagine that it's no coincidence. He just didn't land in for no reason. So you'd hope that he's paying attention and thinking, well, this could happen or this could happen, and maybe we could do something even better than the college crowd this weekend.
And why do you think the GA maybe don't pull off something like this? Is it just lack of funding that maybe these colleges are getting, or is it just no real will there?
I don't know who picked up the bill for half of what went on. I mean, ESPN must have paid for it themselves. And of course, there's massive advertising and all that goes into it. But in terms of the GAA, look, they're able to put up the prices of the tickets to the All-Ireland. Why don't we see that trickle back down to, you know, putting on some kind of events? I suppose I don't know what other events are able to block off Dame Street. I heard that comment being like, well, why is it that you don't do that for Paddy's Day? And look, we can all think of a number of reasons why it doesn't. But for something like the All-Ireland, which we all absolutely love, it really is that, suppose, 11 o'clock in the morning up until the game kicks off, and then there's an atmosphere around Croke Park. But if you're able to take over a whole city and have people walking up a 35-minute walk up to the Aviva Stadium, but they're planted down in the city centre beforehand, I mean, I'm not going to say it's lack of vision from the GAA, but there's definitely something that we can all take from what happened there on Saturday and say, why can't we apply that to our own Irish sports? And not even just the GAA, to all of the Irish events that go on.
Yeah, well, what did the American public make of Ireland coming over to watch these games?
You know, I spoke to so many Irish people embracing the game that I don't know even how impressed the Americans were, other than extremely. I suppose they stayed in Temple Bar. That might have been a bit out of my price point. But the ones that talked about it, I suppose we were blessed. I don't want to talk about the weather to you, but the weather absolutely helped. Everyone was able to have, whether it's breakfast outside, a bit of lunch, or even a pint. You didn't have to stay indoors. So we were blessed from that point of view. But the city is the right size for these massive events. It takes over every nook and cranny of the city. And we don't see that when we go abroad to London games, to Frankfurt games, to Munich games. Certainly has an impact. But in terms of the scale of the city, it's just so nice and perfect for these massive international events. We saw, whether it was Taylor Swift or otherwise, it really has an impact, the Europa League final, that it's the perfect city for it. And I think the fans coming over really appreciate it. The only problem is we've now had two big upsets in the last three of these games, and some of the big teams mightn't want to come over anymore because they all seem to be losing to underdogs.
That's hopefully where the NFL steps in. Will Kerry's David Shannon, do you think he has a career, hopefully, in the NFL when his college days are over?
It's all up to him now. I think maybe his second punt, he might have wanted a bit more from it, but he got a lucky bounce on it. Not lucky, he got a nice bounce from it. So all those things add up, but certainly he had a fantastic game. His profile absolutely rose. Sure, ESPN featuring him does him no harm in terms of draft profile, because they're talking about him to be featured to millions and millions. And, you know, the NFL guys, they're a week out. They're looking at what the scouts are looking at, what's coming down the line for the draft. So, no, I think it's absolutely helped him. And, yeah, you hear from the guys. I don't watch enough college football to know how good these guys really are. I'm so focused on NFL. But when it comes to him, he definitely seems to have been getting a name for himself. And as all these other Irish guys grow and show off what they can do, I mean, Dan Whelan in the NFL from Ireland, of course, they're talking about him as taking such a leap that he could be top five in the NFL. 2 years ago, he wasn't in the NFL other than on a practice squad. So we clearly have that genetic talent that David certainly has it, and everything's pointing in the right direction for him.
Yeah, the Kerry lads are always going to kick in anyway, funnily enough. I guess one of the main focal points almost of the weekend was Pat McAfee. Did you have much interaction with Pat over the past weekend?
Pat's kind of got down in folklore, isn't he? It was absolutely insane. That man was well able for the points. Shout out to J.R. Mahan's, the pub that hosted it. I think they had a large part in that event taking place. People were wondering why it wasn't in a stadium or, you know, certainly like a nice arena. It was down to that pub wanted to get it done, or it mightn't have gotten done otherwise. So fair play to them. But Pat McAfee, I think I don't know how many people knew of Pat McAfee coming over, but he's done his own stock, no problem. I know he's big, whether it's from the WWE or from doing the American football. But yeah, massive weekend for him. I would love to know how much of a keg he drank, because he certainly made a dent into one or two of them.
And Seamus there as well. What a great ambassador for Dublin to have as well in the world stage.
Seamus was, if anyone misses, Seamus was pulling points at Pat McAfee's show. Like, legit, we were there. He was not, it wasn't just for cameras. Off camera, Seamus was pulling the points. He then goes on to the game day set. I was the only one to pick Georgia to win that game. And it obviously came off. You have these big time analysts or whatever. I don't know who he spoke to. I'd imagine some of his WWE counterparts might have had a word in his ear, because he was talking about AJ Styles and stuff. So yeah, it's amazing to have Seamus over. And talk about an ambassador. He is so proud of his Irish roots, and that really came through, whether he was asking for a shout out on camera for County Clare, where his mother is from, or just the pride that he takes in Dublin. And, you know, it's genuine. And I think that goes for any Irish athlete that goes abroad. They love coming back here, and we were thrilled, I think, to see Seamus just enjoy himself so much. And not only did he work in Jeremiah's, he was behind the bar then later on in Keogh's in the city centre, so he seemed to just been free labour for the week that was in it.
Unbelievable. Mark, really appreciated that, mate. That was unreal.
Brilliant stuff from Mark there. So something a bit special now. And the 2019 champion jockey Pat Smullen would set up a charity race in aid of Cancer Trials Ireland. Now, Pat would die of pancreatic cancer himself a year later, but in 2024, his son Paddy rode in the race, honouring his father. The race has just ended, unfortunately, as it took place just about half an hour ago, and it wasn't the win for Paddy, but I'm sure he did his father proud. Enjoy the chat.
Well, Paddy Smullen, how are you first and foremost, anyway?
I'm good, Dan, yourself?
Ah, sure, tipping away. We'll just get straight into it. Your dad set up this Legends race in the current in 2019 to raise funds for pancreatic cancer trials, which he would unfortunately pass away from a year later. And now, 5 years later, since its inception, his son, who carries his name, is picking up the mantle and reins and riding in public, I believe, for the first time ever. What advice do you think your dad would give to you coming into this race?
It's hard to know now. It would have been great for him to be here and give me good advice. It's the racetrack he's kind of had the most success on. So I think he just sent me to stay calm and let the race carry out itself and just enjoy it. So, yeah, that's hopefully all happen.
Yeah, and I'm sure it'll be made all the more special, I guess, by you riding in the Derby course, the race he won twice, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to be old enough to remember in 2016 Harrison winning it. So it's really special to me. It's the most memorable win has had.
Do you think there's maybe more pressure on yourself, obviously, carrying on the name and being your son, or do you think you'll be able to relax into it more on the day?
I think I'm feeling the pressure. I don't think anyone else is going to put any on me, but of course I'm feeling a little bit more pressure about it. But I think once I'm out there, I'll relax into it and just enjoy it. So,
yeah exactly. It's something you just like put it on yourself, but no one else will be taking any notice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, and the legacy of this race, really, like Paddy, can't be understated. Like it's raised €175,000 last year alone.
I think it's great that we've kind of kept it on. I think it could have been just a one-off thing in 2019, but I think it's great to keep it going every year because it's a problem that a lot of families have experienced, and there's no solution to it yet. So every euro donated is a step closer to finding a solution to it and helping everyone affected by it. So.
Yeah, it's great. Like this could last for, it could be something that lasts them all the time. It doesn't have to ever end as well as such, which is it's certainly a great thing as well. Can you tell us a bit about pancreatic cancer? It just seems maybe one of those types of cancers that people don't see as much as some of the main types.
So I won't say too much about it because in case I say something wrong, I don't really know a lot about it. But
you're all right. I do that anyway. I do that for a living.
It's one of the rarer types of cancer anyway, and I think it's one of, if not the most kind of the smallest chances of survival. So I think it's really vital that we kind of raise funds and for research and trials to help find solutions to it and find treatments for it that will hopefully work better than the ones we already have.
Not to get into your personal details, but do you remember your father's diagnosis from back then and the whole timeline of then him going to set up the race and then the race actually coming to fruition in the Curragh and every year since?
Yeah, I do remember all of it, but I was around 10 or 11 when he got diagnosed, and to me, I didn't really know much about it. I didn't think much of it, really, and I thought, oh, it's my dad, he'll be fine, you know? So it kind of only really dawned on me once it happened when he passed away. And the race, I wasn't too involved in it because I was so young, of course, but I remember the day of it anyway, and it was a super day, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure like the horse race community absolutely adored your dad. I mean, that must be great for you to see as well, and how greatly he was appreciated by everyone.
Yeah, definitely, because it's kind of reflected on me as well, with everyone treating me so well because of him. And everyone's so nice to me about it. No matter where I go involved in racing, whether it's to the races or riding out, everyone's always happy to give me a hand and be nice to me and all that. So, yeah, it's really great.
I know you were young at the time as well, but with your dad's passing, did horses and horse racing allow you to even take your mind off things just even a small bit?
So I've kind of always been involved with horses and I've always had an interest in them. And kind of when after he passed, kind of a few years later when I was old enough to really kind of let my ideas go free, I really got interested into the racing and really wanted to become an amateur jockey. I'm afraid I won't be able to go to flat route because I'm a bit too tall for that and I won't make the weights for it. So definitely do as much as I can as an amateur anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was going to say your dad had over 1,845 winners in Ireland and the UK. I'm sure it would have been much more if he was still with us today. Do you think race riding now is going to be your profession? I know you said amateur, but there might be a nice segue into national hunt racing there at some stage.
I'm not sure about that. The national hunt racing is a tough sport to rely on now. And I have massive respect for all the jump jockeys because what they put their bodies through and the risks they take. So I don't know if I'll go down that route now. It's a hard sport to rely on for a living, so I'm not sure about that.
Someone give you good advice anyway. Yeah. You're right now for any trainers at the moment?
It's been mainly just Gordon Elliott in the last month or two. So I've been right now in Dermot as well before that, and I'll probably go back there once school starts, just for a lot before school, because it's on the way. So I love right now in both, and then I'll probably get more use of Gordon Elliott's, because obviously that's kind of the horses I'll be riding in the future, hopefully in bumpers and stuff like that. So but I really enjoy it right now in both, and everyone's very good to me at both places.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus, you must have learned an awful lot riding out for those two top trainers as well.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And all the work riders are happy to give me tips and stuff like that, so it's really great, yeah.
Well, look, how can people get involved and support the Pat's Mullen race and race day?
Of course, they can show up on the day would be the best, and there's a barbecue up in the Oaks restaurant that you can buy entry to online with your ticket. And then there'll be activities for kids and all as well. And there's face painting and a whole kids zone. And then there is the Curra to Curra cycle that's going on before the racing that you could take part in. And also you can go and donate online or go to GoFundMe and search up Pat's Mullen Charity Race, and all the riders' GoFundMes will come up there. And that could be the best way to donate if you're not able to show up on the day. So, yeah, either of those would be great.
Pat's Mullen, that's it for me. Thanks so much, mate. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, brilliant stuff from Paddy. As I said, the race day was today. Paddy unfortunately didn't get the win, but I'm sure he did his dad very, very proud. So you can't get a ticket, but you can always donate to Cancer Trials Ireland anytime, or go to the GoFundMe links on Paddy Smullen's Instagram page, or just search it on GoFundMe. That's all we have time for here on the Big Red Bench on Cork's Go Times Red FM. Dan Casey signing off.